The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable Peter C. Kavanaugh presiding.
We'll first call 4-22-0668, Barbara A. Thompson, appellees et al. Versus Bernard F. Whalen, all appellants. Attorneys for the appellant, could you please state your full names for the record?
Sure. Christopher Jump on behalf of Bernard Whalen and Yetter Manufacturing Company, and I am joined by my colleague David Lubin.
And Peter Allport on behalf of appellant, the estate of Patrick T. Whalen.
Very good.
Mr. Lubin, if you're going to remain on the screen, then fix your shirt and tie.
Shirt and tie?
Hold up. Looks like it's open. This is courtroom attire when we're on Zoom.
I apologize, Judge.
Not at all. Sometimes we all need a reminder.
Thank you, Justice Connect, counsel. It's our understanding that Mr. Jump's argument will be a 15-minute argument and Mr. Allport 5 minutes. Is that your understanding, gentlemen?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well. Counsel for the appellee, if you could please state your full name for the record.
Jonathan Scott Hoover.
Thank you. Counsel, you may proceed.
All right. Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors and counsel, and may it please the court. Today, we are asking the court to answer three different questions that have been certified pursuant to Illinois Supreme Court Rule 308. And as Your Honor pointed out, the counsel's intentions are that I will argue the first two questions in regards to the statute of limitations for the Section 1256 claims. And then Mr. Allport, the attorney for the estate of Patrick Whalen, will address his third certified question as it pertains to the claim for conversion. So, Your Honors, for purposes of my segment, the defendants are requesting this court answer the first two certified questions by finding that, one, the proper statute of limitations for purposes of claims raised under 1256 of the BCA is 5 years, and that a claim under 1256 accrues when the purported shareholder knew or should have known that his or her rights as a shareholder or status as a shareholder were not being recognized.
Could I interject for just one moment? Is Justice Steigman still with us?
Judge, I'm going to put everybody back in the waiting room. Okay. Actually, he's in the waiting room. Here he comes.
Pardon me, gentlemen. Seems like we lost one of the panel.
No problem.
Time will be added back on.
Thank you, Your Honor. Would you like me to repeat any of that for Justice Steigman?
More than likely. Let's see. Let's hear from him.
To Illinois Supreme Court Rule 308, the intentions is that I will be addressing the first two certified questions as they pertain to the Section 1256 claims, and then Mr. Allport, on behalf of the defendants, and he's with the estate of Patrick Whalen, will be addressing the third certified question as it pertains to conversion count. And for purposes of my segment, the defendants are asking the court today to find that the proper statute of limitations for purposes of a 1256 claim under the BCA is 5 years, and that a claim under 1256 accrues when the purported shareholder knew or should have known that his or her status or rights as a shareholder were not being recognized. So to begin, Your Honors, the applicable statute of limitations here for purposes of a 1256 claim is 5 years. As provided in Section 13-205 of the Code of Civil Procedure, all civil actions not otherwise provided for shall be commenced within 5 years next after the cause of action accrued. And this statute has been applied to many other claims where there's not a specific statute of limitations set forth, such as breaches of fiduciary duty, common law fraud, fraudulent misrepresentation, claims that are somewhat similar to those that are being raised under 1256. Nowhere else in the Code of Civil Procedure or the Business Corporations Act does there exist any provision setting forth some other statute of limitations for purposes of a claim under 1256, specifically 1256 A3, which is more what's alluded to in the complaint. And in fact, the BCA explicitly provides that practice and actions under 1256 shall be the same as in other civil actions, except as provided in the Act. So again, nowhere else in the Business Corporations Act is there a specified statute of limitations for a 1256 claim. Now, the Illinois legislature, our position is, had every opportunity to do this, Your Honors, and they chose not to. But if you look throughout the BCA, there are other instances where the Illinois legislature did insert different statutes of limitations without that or throughout that act. We gave a few examples in our brief, but a couple of those are Section 1590, which is establishes a 7-year statute of limitations for franchise fees, taxes, and penalties. There's a provision under Section 1275 for a 120-day statute of limitations for known claims after a corporation is dissolved. So there are instances throughout the Act where they're specifically included. But we also argue that just because there's not a statute of limitations specifically included, this doesn't mean that one doesn't exist. And the case I'd like to highlight that's mentioned in our brief is the Gillespie Community Unit School District Number 7, Macoupin County v. White and Company. And in that case, the Illinois Supreme Court was analyzing in part whether or not Section 13-205 would apply to a claim for fraudulent misrepresentation in a construction case. That case involved a school that had suffered significant structural damage due to some coal mine subsidence. And this school district ended up filing suit. So while the court in that case was analyzing the language of another limitation statute, I acknowledge that it was Section 13-214 regarding construction claims. The Supreme Court ultimately found that Section 13-205 applied to fraud-based construction claims because there were no other limitations periods governing those claims, particularly those set forth in that statute. Now, I think this case is also very similar to our situation here because the Business Corporations Act, like Section 13-214, contains language that further directs the plaintiffs to other applicable statutes of limitations under Illinois law.
Counsel, I have a question for you. I want to make sure I understand your position. Is it your position that the catch-all provision of the Code of Criminal Procedure in Section 13-205 provides the applicable statute of limitations in this case, which is 5 years?
That's correct. And Judge, not to correct you, it'd be the Civil Code of Code of Procedure, but yes, the 13-205.
Did I misspeak? I'm sorry if I did.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, I did just speak there.
Well, then my next question is, and I'm not sure if I understood your initial remarks. Do you believe that the discovery rule, which is applicable to some statute of limitations, would apply in this case or generally in regard to 13-205, where we're talking about a requirement that before the statute of limitations would run, the injured party knows or reasonably should have known that they suffered an injury?
So yes, Your Honor, I believe the short answer to your question is yes. I do believe the discovery rule would apply in this case as it's been applied to Section 13-205 in other instances. But I do believe it would apply here. And when that shareholder knew or should have known that his shareholder rights or status were being disregarded, then that is when the discovery rule would have went into place.
Is my understanding also correct that the trial court, I guess for lack of a better way to put it, hasn't yet had occasion to address that? It hasn't really been pleaded or evidence presented on whether the discovery rule would apply in this particular case. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. We were unable really to find a case directly on point under Illinois law that was applying the discovery rule to 1256 claims. We were able to find, and it's brought up in other, and I understand there was some unprecedented cases that were, or non-precedential cases, excuse me, that were discussed. The Burt case, for example, in which was dealing with conversion, which I'll let Mr. Allport get into in a moment, but that was a case where shareholder rights were disregarded. They applied the discovery rule.
So the trial court denied your motion to dismiss, but The court hasn't yet had an opportunity to address or hear evidence on the question of whether the discovery rule under your position should apply here, or the normal five-year standard under 13205 applies. Isn't that correct?
I would agree, Your Honor, that we haven't had any evidentiary proceedings yet to determine if they knew or should have known. But our argument would be that the face of the complaint in this situation is actually what answers that question. The allegations that are specifically set forth in the complaint by the plaintiffs make numerous references over the course of a span of almost 30 years, Judge, dating back to 1992, where they're mentioning requests for financial records. They mention not being allocated profits and losses. They actually specifically provide dates of 1987.
Well, but none of that's before us now.
Is that correct? That's correct. Okay.
So my question then, though, is, and again, I'm trying to make sure I understand what's going on in this case, and I'll ask Mr. Hoover when it's his opportunity. It seems to me that the appellees aren't necessarily in disagreement with your essential position, namely that the statute of limitations under 13-205 applies with the discovery rule applicable. Have I missed that, or what's going on?
I believe that, and I don't want to speak for him either, Your Honor, but I believe that my understanding of their argument is that Section 13-205 would apply to the conversion claim, but the shareholder remedies claims that I'm arguing, they believe essentially that there is no statute of limitations, that this claim would live on indefinitely, provided that the plaintiff or the petitioner is actually a shareholder.
Well, but at least in one of the claims, they would embrace the discovery rule application as you do. And I suspect on the other, as an alternative argument, they'd say, but if we were to disagree that there's no statute of limitations, it should be the five-year statute with the discovery rule apply. Would that be correct?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not sure if I'm fully understanding your question.
It's understandable because I'm not sure I made it very clear. So,
I apologize.
I suppose from their position, they're trying to argue there's no statute of limitations at all, that one claim you discussed. But it seems to me that consistent with their general position, as an alternative, they'd be willing to accept the discovery rule applicable on that claim as well, would they not? And again, I'll ask Mr. Hoover, and he can clarify. Yeah.
I don't want to speak for him. I believe so, Your Honor, but I'm reluctant to speak too much for Mr. Hoover. I apologize.
Okay, go ahead.
Sure. And so to go back, though, to the just the five-year component of this, what the Gillespie Court, in part, Your Honor, was discussing was that when the legislature has intended that there be no statute of limitations, they've expressly stated that. And the examples they give are first-degree murder, Class 1 felonies, Class X felonies. The statutes specifically set forth that there is no statute of limitations, and that's simply not the case here. And what I think there is an analogy between the Gillespie case and our case here, because the statute that was discussed there and the Business Corporations Act both basically leave open this catch-all provision of Section 13205. They direct us there. I admit by different means, but we essentially get to the same point. And so I think—
Well, counsel, let me ask this, and again, a question I'll ask Mr. Hoover. Are you aware of any civil action by whatever name for which there is no statute of limitations? It can be brought forever.
I would argue no, Judge. I believe Mr. Hoover is probably going to argue in part the Vizcarra non-precedential case that was discussed. I'm happy to address that part of it, Your Honor, with that case. The Vizcarra case, albeit, you know, again, non-precedential out of the third district, even the legal commentators and opposing counsel cited this in the brief, they cited to the Illinois Practice Series, which itself acknowledged that the case isn't really clear because the alleged wrong happened during the five-year period anyway. So it's we don't really have an answer out of Vizcarra. But I think Vizcarra was really setting forth the elements of the claim. which we wouldn't really disagree with the elements part of it, because, you know, the, for example, having to be a shareholder, of course, we would agree with that. And that there had to be some oppressive or fraudulent action. We would agree that those are elements of a 1256 claim in order to bring it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's no statute of limitations. I mean, if you look at the elements, for example, of a breach of contract claim, we don't mention the statute of limitations in the elements of the claim. If you look at a claim for negligence, we don't look at the statute of limitations for the elements of the claim. And so the point is here is I don't think that that case, to the extent it was saying that there is no statute of limitations, if it is, I would say that it's wrong. But if I really think they were getting more to an issue of standing more than an issue of statute of limitations.
But you can't think of any other instance where there's no statute of limitations for a civil cause of action?
I don't feel comfortable saying any civil cause of action, Your Honor, but is
it not familiar with any
claim? Then no, I'm not aware.
Okay, well, that's a question I'll ask Mr. Huberlin later on. Go ahead.
So that all being said, Your Honors, I think to wrap up the first part of this, and it is, I'm sorry, I'm having a little Zoom glitch here, that there's no express statute of limitations anywhere in the Business Corporations Act. There's no anywhere that says that the statute should live or the claim should live on indefinitely. So we should look at the plain language of the Business Corporations Act. The fact that there is a catch-all provision out there that's applied to similar types of claims before, and we should apply Section 13205. To go back to what Your Honor was talking about earlier with the discovery rule, and I think this addresses the second question here is the defendant's position is that a claim under 1256 accrues when the shareholder knew or should have known that their rights were not being recognized. And this is a well-established rule under Illinois law and has applied to Section 13-205 claims in the past. Again, we didn't have a direct case on point with the 1256 claim. We did reference a couple of other cases that were out of state, but we find them very analogous because they were dealing with shareholder rights issues, and they also had a very similar discovery rule to the state of Illinois. One of those cases was Whitney v. Guys, and in that case, there was a complaint filed in 2010, meaning they had, and there was a three-year statute of limitations there. So that went back to October of 2007. They had correspondence and evidence in that case that showed as early as July 2007, the shareholder had facts that his rights were being disregarded. Therefore, because he knew about it, his claims had began to accrue at that time. The other case that I think is very good is the Alaska case, Egner v. Talbots, and is discussed in our briefs as well. They have an almost identical discovery rule to the state of Illinois, which is that a cause of action accrues when a person has enough information to alert the person that he or she has a potential cause of action or should begin an inquiry to protect his or her rights. That's very close to the Illinois language.
Thank you, counsel. I wanted you to finish that point, but the light is on. You're out of time.
Okay. I'm sorry. I couldn't see a light. I apologize.
Not a problem. Thank you for your argument.
Yep.
Mr. Alport?
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I'm Peter Alport, and I'm counsel for the estate of Patrick T. Whalen, and I will be arguing the appellant's position regarding the third question this court certified for interlocutory appeal. When does a claim for conversion of corporate stock accrue for purposes of triggering the statute of limitations in Section 205? And Your Honors, we think the answer to this question is clear, and as Mr. Jump alluded to, the cause of action for conversion should accrue when the shareholder has inquiry notice that the corporation is failing to honor the shareholder's rights and is not treating the shareholder as an alleged shareholder. And we think this answer is supported by basically a straightforward application of existing Illinois law surrounding the statute of limitations and the discovery rule. And in contrast to the Business Corporation Act claims, there's no dispute that claims for conversion are subject to Section 205, and there's no dispute that claims for conversion are subject to the discovery rule. And
let me ask you a question. How do we know when if we're using the discovery rule, how do we know when the discovery occurs?
So, Your Honor, under the discovery rule, the cause accrues when the plaintiff knows they've suffered an injury, when they know or reasonably should know that they've suffered an injury and that it was wrongfully caused. And I think
What evidence is there in this case other than some of the things that were said in the pleadings? I mean, isn't that a factual question?
Your Honor, I think in this case, the face of the pleadings, the plaintiff's own allegations make clear when they would have been able to discover their cause of action for purposes of the discovery rule. Because I think a shareholder is going to know that they have suffered an injury with respect to their shares when the corporation is not honoring or granting the rights and benefits associated with share ownership. For example, if a corporation is not providing a shareholder with notice of shareholder meetings, if it's not giving the shareholder the opportunity to exercise their statutory rights, such as voting on board of directors, if the shareholder is not giving them dividends, but it's giving other shareholders dividends, they should know at that point in time that they've suffered an injury with respect to their shares. And if they seek
to- How do they know that other shareholders are getting dividends?
How do they know? Well,
whether anybody else is.
So, Your Honor, I think they would know that they're entitled to notice of shareholder meetings and they're entitled to vote on the board of directors, and they were able to inquire as to whether or not they're entitled to a dividend. And I think if they reach out and ask those questions.
I asked whether how would they know that other people had had dividends distributed? They wouldn't.
So, Your Honor, it wouldn't be in the record that's before us. Presumably, there could be circumstances where it's disclosed in corporate materials, but
correct. Well, that would be evidence yet before us.
That would be evidence, Your Honor. But
and if they made any inquiries other than were in the pleadings, that wouldn't be before us. If they had any testimony about talking to an agent?
Your Honor. There is no evidence as to what happened outside of what they've alleged in their.
Fact finder decide? Why would a fact finder want to decide that or be obligated to decide that on the basis of the pleadings when you haven't really even reached that issue yet?
Well, because Your Honor, I think in this case, the plaintiffs are the master of their own pleadings, and they've made judicial admissions that they acquired ownership of these shares in 1992. And since that point in time, they have not received any of the rights or benefits associated with share ownership. And they've never taken any efforts whatsoever to enforce those rights during that entire period from 1992 until they filed this suit in 2021.
Well, would it be a factual question if that delay, absent any other facts, any facts at all, that would be determinative?
Well, yes, Your Honor, I think it would be, because I think they, as a shareholder, they should know they have rights, and the fact that they haven't been able to exercise or benefit from those rights for 30 years would have put them on inquiry notice that they've suffered some sort of injury with respect to their shares.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, Mr. Hoover, we'll hear from you.
Thank you. Thank you, May the support. I'll just start by saying I do agree that the first argument that we made is that the applicable statute of limitations for the 1256 would be that there isn't a set 5-year deadline, and that section, the catch-all section, does not apply. As the Ellen has mentioned and referred to the Vizcarra case, I do largely adopt that argument, but I think with the court, the issue and what should be looked at is this statute and the remedies, kind of what it was made for, and how it addresses issues with privately held corporations. And if you look at the language of 1256, it's very broad in terms of its remedies and what it does. In fact, I would in some ways think of it more as closer to equity than I would to a kind of traditional statute. But my point is it gives the circuit court broad authority to correct anything in the corporate history. It references going back to you know, views when the corporation was formed till now. And so this idea that a shareholder would be kind of out of time to address an oppression from the corporation doesn't have a basis.
Also, let me ask you the question I said I was going to ask. Is it your position that there's no statute of limitation that applies to the claims made in this case?
The 1256 claim, I believe, as long as you're a shareholder, I would say there is an ultimate, and I addressed this in my response. I know there was a dispute about what to call it. I did say that there is a maximum. I don't want
What's the maximum?
The dissolution of the corporation, the survival, plus five.
So it could be 40 years or 50 years or 120 years, theoretically, could it not?
If the corporation is still active, yes. If they find a mistake, I think they should be able to.
That's what the legislature intended for causes of action of this kind?
I think to correct mistakes in the corporation, I think that's the point. Like even if it's a records are wrong, and that's why they can do an accounting and they have the authority under the statute to go all the way back to the beginning.
Well, here's my question that I asked Mr. Jump as well. Are you aware of any other civil cause of action of any kind for which there is no statute of limitations at all?
So I would say civil commitment would be the closest example. So like of a sexually violent predator, that if they're found that to be at any time, that suit can be brought, which is civil, and then they would be incarcerated or treated. And it's, I don't believe it has a statute of limitations.
Well, of course, that's quasi-criminal in any event, but I'm not sure I'd want to go back and check the statute. But how about just any good old-fashioned civil case? We're talking about dollars and cents or in interest in property and the like. Are you aware of any cause of action for which there literally is no statute of limitations?
I would say the only other one would, believe, be a mutual easement or like a levy. I believe if it's for mutual benefit, it can be brought at any time.
What about the discovery rule applicable? You heard my discussion with Mr. Jump, where seems to be saying he's happy with the 13205 statute of limitations with the discovery rule applied. What's your position on that?
Well, if the court finds that that statute applies, I think the discovery rule would have to be applicable, yes. But that's not I still take the first position. I don't think that applies, but I think if it, otherwise it would, it obviously have to apply if there is a limitation, whatever the court would assign.
So if we agreed with you, this would be the first case of Illinois jurisprudence, civil case involving issues of property interest or dollars or corporate structure, for which we'd say no statute of limitations applies, could be brought now, 40 years from now, 80 years from now, as long as the corporation is still in existence. Is that correct?
And you have you're a shareholder and it's redressing an oppression. Yes. I mean, but again, that's because the remedies are not necessarily monetary in some of this. And where the other concern I have is if you take the appellant's position, is then are different sections of 1256 subject to different statutes of limitations based on what they are? I mean, it doesn't seem like that. It seems to me when you read this and look at the intent that it's to address kind of internal disputes of the corporation. And in addition, these kind of disputes, and this is where when we cited to it and discussed it in my brief regarding in Gidwitz, and I know the appellant has talked about this a little bit, but these are continuing issues that or not, this was not made to address a singular event, a singular one-time thing. This is about a pattern and an ongoing oppression, because that's how this tends to go. And so to isolate it back to a traditional kind of five-year is when it accrues. It doesn't make sense, because that's not how this works, particularly when you have these close corporations with, you know, family members and a lot of kind of internal disputes. I think you can't say it would accrue at the beginning, which is what the appellants are in effect asking. And this is part of my argument too against, I know I'm arguing against both of them and they took it separately. But my issue I have with the conversion count and the discovery rule on that issue is there is a fact dispute clearly of when the conversion occurred. And I don't think the defendants can just plainly put it back in 1993 to get out of a cause of action. I don't think that's where it is. And I think it's one thing to deny certain aspects of shareholder rights. And that's why I cited the One Fish case. It doesn't mean that automatically your shares have been taken or converted. And you can't be put on notice for something that hasn't yet happened. And that's part of our dispute between myself and appellants on this issue, which is that the time that the conversion happened is in dispute, because the plaintiffs had the shares, were awarded the shares, and the plaintiffs, in their briefs have instituted nothing saying when that occurred or evidence in that way, and instead just make this argument to kind of get out of the liability. And I don't think that's proper. I don't think that has any support. So,
counsel, I'll ask you a question, and I can sometimes be accused of trying to make things too simple, but I understand your argument with regard to notice and equity. It certainly, you make a good argument, but in light of the plain meaning of the catch-all provision in the statute, and you're sort of pushing out this statute of limitations in section 1256, how do I rectify the two?
How do you rectify 1256 in the catch-all? Is that what you're asking?
Ultimately, well, yes.
Well, and I would say it doesn't apply, because the catch-all would cause a conflict in some way with the 1256 statute. And I'll just give you an example.
Well, part of my question involved the fact that you seem to be parsing out of the code a statute of limitations with regard to the dissolution. I mean, I don't know that's clearly stated that's the case.
Oh, I just meant that that's the ultimate end. And if you can call it a statute of limitations, I don't want to get caught up on what words I used if I use the wrong word, but I think there's an ultimate end. I don't think it's infinity. I think as long as an entity winds up and is dissolved, then there's a time for claims to be brought, and that you're a shareholder, which we are, which is the other important part of this. This isn't something that can be brought by anybody.
After the dissolution, is there a time period within which claims can still be brought?
Yes, the 5 years. That's the survival. That's point 12.80, I believe is the number.
So there's none before that, but 5 years after that.
Once it's dissolved, yeah. Because at that point, it has to be addressed, because the entity is no longer there. You know, you want to get you have a time to ultimately get everything and all the books and all the accounting and everything dealt with properly. And so an example I would give is a current shareholder could ask for something that was denied to them, like a report 10 years ago. They could ask for that report now, and it would be improper. It would be unfair to me, and I think it would be misreading 1256 to say that they couldn't get that report because the time was up, because they knew about it 10 years ago and were denied. And so I think that this claim can proceed under 1256 because you're a shareholder. You have an interest in the company. it's you're being oppressed, or they're waste or misapplying it with the assets. Or you just want an accounting and you give a basis. Because again, the court has to give basis for all these things, and there's evidence that's heard and as the proceeding commences. It's not just something that a person can just do because they're a shareholder by itself and make the court do it. And so I think when you look at it that way, shareholders can bring these claims. The courts can look at all of the evidence and the corporation and how it's being run, and then remedy it appropriately, whether it's dealing with the shares, ordering dividends, even ultimately dissolution of the company, right? And again, these are all continuing violations. And so it would, if you do impart a statute of limitations, it would be one that would be reset every time. And I think it's this idea that it ends at some point because a certain report isn't given. I don't think there's a basis for that. I think the way it would be is if you're denying reports, each time you deny a report, that whatever statute of limitations, if the court finds there is one, would start over because it's a continuing violation. And I believe since you're a shareholder, you can bring it when there's continuing violations, and it's always timely.
All right. Any questions? Seeing none, Mr. Jump, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm going to try to address a few of the issues that counsel brought up. For one, I do not believe that 1256 conflicts with Section 13205. 13205 expressly states all civil actions not otherwise provided for. Section 1260 of the Business Corporations Act says that practice under 1256 shall be as in all other civil actions. You read those two statutes together, suggests that 13205 would apply to a 1256 claim. So that's issue one. And the other one is, I want to be clear, the corporate survival statute is not a statute of limitations. That is a deadline after a dissolved corporate, once a company dissolves, for any claims to be brought. I find it coincidental that it's 5 years. I mean, the purpose of that is that when, for example, I think it actually arose out of products liability cases. So let's say a company sells a product on the day they close and dissolve, that there could still be claims brought against the company thereafter, because you may never discover that defect in the product until a few years later. So they were trying to find a balance there. And I think the 5 years, and why I mentioned it in my briefs, is I think the 5 years after the corporate survival statute, the corporate survival statute lines up with the 5 year statute of limitations.
What's the difference between a deadline and the statute of limitations?
Your Honor, I find it to be an interesting question, but I know, and I'm drawing a blank off the top of my head, which of the cases we cited addressed it, but it is expressly stated that the survival statute is different. I agree that there's basically a deadline for them to bring a claim and a tomato, but it technically is not considered a statute of limitations. Now, Your Honors, the other item, again, I think counsel addressed standing. Yes, you have to be a shareholder to bring a cause of action. Otherwise, Section 1250, the remedies under 1256 wouldn't make sense. So I do believe that the issue of being a shareholder is a standing issue. And then I also want to address a couple things, and I think this also goes back to Your Honor's questions with Mr. Allport earlier, but also addresses something Mr. Hoover brought up with the one fish, two fish case. That case, in part, where they found notice for purposes of whether they knew or should have known, was dating back to a prior lawsuit filed in federal court. And Your Honor, that is where the knew or should have known in this case, it's not really the other factual allegations in the complaint, but they knew in 1992 that our clients were claiming an interest in those shares. They knew then by the raising of that lawsuit. So they knew then that they needed to assert those interests, and they didn't do so. So whether or not they received a dividend, whether or not they were allocated profits or losses, or they knew someone else did, what they did know for sure due to the filing of the lawsuit in 1990 and the judgment in 1992 was that we were claiming an interest in those shares. And so I think, and that's similar somewhat to the one fish, two fish case, which applied the discovery rule to the conversion count. So that was dealing with LLC interests rather than a corporate stock, but I think that's a very analogous case for those reasons. The other issue that's brought up is, we would dispute that they are a shareholder, but that's not before the court. So, Your Honors, the purpose of a statute of limitations is to discourage the presentation of stale claims and encourage the diligence in the bringing of claims. They provide predictability and finality in the orderly administration of justice. And so for those reasons, Your Honor, we're asking the court to answer the questions as the defendants have requested, find that a five-year statute of limitations applies to 1256 claims, and if those claims accrue when the shareholder knew or should have known that his rights were being disregarded or not being recognized, and it's similarly for the conversion count, when they knew that their rights as a shareholder or they were not being treated as a shareholder when they either knew or should have known that. So thank you, Your Honors. I'll take any further questions if you have any.
I see none. Thank you, Mr. Jump, and to all the counsel for excellent argument. The court will take this matter under advisement, and we now stand in recess.